Welcome to the Educause podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the Educause 2008 annual conference. Participants include Tanya Justin, lecturer and educational technology consultant at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, A.J. Kelton, director of emerging instructional technology at the College of Humanities and Social Sciences at Montclair State University, Deborah Kayak-Franson, director of academic technologies at the University of Colorado at Boulder, and Wendy Shapiro, senior academic technology officer at Case Western Reserve University. The session is entitled Assessing the Student Experience in Second Life.
Welcome to a special session on Second Life. I'd like to introduce the presenters. First of all, Tanya Justin, lecturer in educational technology consultant at University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. And she is an instructional design consultant. She plays a significant role in the online and blended hybrid faculty development program and specializes in teaching fully online. Have A.J. Kelton. A.J.? A.J. is emerging instructional technologist for College of Humanities and Social Sciences at Montclair State University. With Second Life, I'm a docent on ISTE Island, and whenever I have somebody come in with a question that I can't answer, I say, contact A.J. A.J. has two publications out that related to Second Life. One is called Second Life in Education. Second Life, Reaching into the Virtual World of Real World Learning, and another one called Virtual Worlds Outlook Good. He's the founder and current leader of the Educause Virtual Worlds Constituent Group. Deborah Kayak-Franson is the Director of Academic Technology at University of Colorado at Boulder. She's responsible for strategic planning for the use, implementation, and evaluation of educational technologies and for leading the evaluation of emerging technologies for potential use in teaching and learning on campus. And Wendy Shapiro. Wendy is the Senior Academic Technology Officer at Case Western Reserve University. Is responsible for the design, implementation, and evaluation of innovative and emerging technologies to support academic needs at Case. My name is Lloyd Onyed. I'm the convener. I'm from Indiana University of Pennsylvania, and I'm Computer Merlin in Second Life. I'd like to introduce Steve Taylor, moderator, and Steve is Director of Academic Computing Services at Vassar College. Oh, before Steve gets started, I mentioned one other thing. There's an evaluation that's online for the session, so be sure and do the evaluation. You can either do it at the kiosks or later on when you get back to your campus, or if you've got a wireless laptop or anything here. Please do evaluations after each session, though. Thank you.
Thanks for coming. We're hoping that you're familiar enough with Second Life that we don't have to do a lot of introduction to what it is. The focus of our session today is assessment, and each of our panelists has thought about and in many cases implemented some kinds of assessment of the student experience in Second Life, so that's what we're here to talk about. I'm just going to mention also that we're simulcasting the audio from the panel to Second Life in the Cleveland Plus site, and you'll see that on the screen. Most of the time we won't be interacting very directly with that, but for your amusement you can look over to see that, and each of the panelists will mention their avatar names, hopefully, too. I'm Stan Frangible. Online. And so I'm just going to ask each of our panelists to tell us what kind of Second Life activity their institution is doing, what their thoughts and experience are about assessing that. And we'll start with Tanya.
Hi, my name's Tanya Justin. I'm from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and my avatar is Juice Gioza. What we wanted to do today was start off with a little video that will let some of you folks that are possibly new to Second Life give you a quick glimpse. It's about a few minutes into what Second Life is. And also it talks a little bit about the pedagogical uses at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. After that, I'll move in to talk specifically about the assessment that we've been doing at UWM. And so I'm just going to go ahead and play that. And we're switching audio here, so just bear with us.
Thank you. For the last couple of years, educators have been starting to implement virtual worlds into their higher education courses. The New Media Consortium and EDUCAUSE Learning Initiative in 2007 reported that virtual worlds such as Second Life are an emerging technology that will impact higher education in the near future. Virtual worlds such as Second Life have the potential to engage and motivate students by providing an alternative platform for learning where they can construct knowledge through observation, discourse, and interaction. Virtual worlds are noted for their ability to engage students through their 3D environments. They also provide a stage for students to share their work products through an immersive synchronous medium. Second Life is a platform that students and faculty access through a software download. The software provides access to a virtual space through a network where people can connect with other people. The virtual platform consists of virtual places, called islands and sims, where students congregate, share, communicate, and perform. These islands and sims have virtual locations such as classrooms, amphitheaters, galleries, labs, and medical facilities. Students enter the world as avatars, or digital representations of themselves, which are customizable to represent the student's own identity or any identity they choose. The potential for transforming learning from a didactic process utilizing a lean medium into a stimulating, thought-provoking, and medium-rich setting is great. Second Life can engage the attention of students, make them active participants in their learning, and provide them the opportunity to enhance not only their cognitive skills, but also the behavioral and affective abilities for real-world learning in a virtual world. Students are able to take on an identity in Second Life, which can be similar or different from their own. They go through an orientation exercise to learn how to perform some basic functions in Second Life. Students just need to know the basics, navigation, teleporting, and chatting, in order to complete tasks, but many students spend time changing their appearance and visiting additional sites in Second Life that interest them. Our exploration of Second Life at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee was part of a 2008 Emerging Technology Pilot Grant Program sponsored by the University of Wisconsin System Administration and the Learning Technology Development Council. Our focus was to examine how virtual worlds and emerging technology impacted student learning. Also, we wanted to know what were some best practices for faculty in using virtual worlds. Faculty grant participants were from the School of Continuing Education, Clinical Lab Sciences, Occupational Therapy, and the Department of Communication. There were three primary uses at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee that resulted as part of the grant project. The first was that students could meet with their peers and instructor in Second Life in order to receive and discuss course content. This was especially useful when discussing sensitive subjects such as ethics. Second Life provides physical distance, giving students a sense of safety in expressing their opinions and ideas.
This is a class from UWM that met in the new health sciences building on our island. Students are also able to take on the identity of others. In this example here, students from UWM were able to be put in a role play situation in a 3D immersive environment, making the experience more real to them, providing an opportunity for experiential learning that is engaging.
Students were able to access people, organizations, and information not available to them in the real world and in such an engaging manner. Second Life has a wealth of resources available to students, faculty, and the general community.
Students examine Second Life as a phenomena as a communication scholar. They define the media characteristics of Second Life and compared Second Life to other communication technologies to gain an understanding of the technology and its potential effectiveness in organizations. Students had access to organizations like IBM and Manpower in Second Life and were able to analyze the organization's selection of virtual worlds to meet communication needs of the company, such as recruitment, marketing, and in other areas. Students were able to apply theory to a practical situation, providing real-life learning in a virtual world.
Sorry, I had a lot of people sending me friendship offers during that situation there. by no means am I a video professional. I just was trying to put a quick tour together for folks to just give them an idea of the potential of Second Life and also the pedagogical uses at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. You know, the reason we're here is to talk about assessing Second Life. And let me try to jump up here. Okay. And so I'm going to talk now just a little bit about our assessment. And doing that, I'll go ahead and stand up. The main thing we wanted to know is this virtual worlds thing worth it? Is it actually going to impact our student learning? We don't like to jump on the bandwagon. We want to make sure that there's substantiated research that lets us know that it is going to impact it. Obviously, in theory, we felt that it should have a great impact on student learning, but we needed to know actually how to measure it. Being that I'm a communication scholar, I was able to look back in the mediated communication theories and pull out some variables, such as media richness theory and social presence theory. Media richness theory by Daft and Langle, social presence by Short et al. To start off with, and then Keisler and them got into it. We also pulled out some other variables just from distance education, such as engagement and learning community from Chickering and others. And then we wanted to know just the basic things, learning, performance, and satisfaction. So we actually ended up pulling out 7 variables, and we developed an instrument that was actually 100 items that we administered to students. The instrument actually performed very well. And I should mention something now. There's a lot of us on the panel and a lot of information, so I am going to breeze through this very quickly. But do know that you can contact all of us individually, and we'll share our findings and research and those sorts of things with you. One of the big things is that we had survey challenges, as probably many of us here on the panel did. We had a low return rate. Only 2 classes actually had students complete the survey. We had 2 faculty that used Second Life, but only offered it as extra credit. So only had a couple students that completed it. We also had a high degree of neutral responses, as you'll see. I've been doing quantitative analysis for a long time, and I've never seen this high of neutral responses. These 2 things lead us to believe that, one, Second Life is out of the realm of faculty. It's hard for them to conceptualize how they can use this in the classroom. Sometimes, and how to put theorizing the pedagogical uses into actual practice. And so we're working on that on our campus. We had 4 faculty, including myself, that participated in this pilot in the spring, and we actually have almost 10 faculty that are looking forward to using it this coming spring. So it's diffusing quite quickly with the help of us to help them conceptualize it. The neutral responses, same thing. I think students are having a problem sort of conceptualizing what it is and how that links directly to their learning. There was also some between course differences based on the pedagogical use. The way I use Second Life in my course was very different from the clinical lab sciences professor, Professor Staluski, and how she used it in her course. So the data was contradictory, so we actually had to separate that right now. And there definitely needs to be a link between how you're evaluating it and the actual activity that took place or activities. There also, in our data, suggests a failure to build online learning community, and this is a very simple reason. These were, my class did 1 activity. Yes, it took them a month to do it. Same thing with Professor Staluski. It was just 1 or 2 activities that they were doing in there. So I think it was the amount of time that didn't give them the opportunity to build that. Also, as with any technology, it's difficult to measure performance at this point. There were items on the survey to measure performance, and so I'm talking too much here, I'm getting told. So let me just run through some findings really quick, and if you want these PowerPoints, let me know. So students did believe that it was a rich media. 50% believed that there was rich and varied language. 50% again, when it came to social presence, they were comfortable interacting in Second Life. 78.6% felt they could form distinct individual impressions of others, which is fantastic. That's one of the reasons we love it. Students believed that it held their attention for the most part, and that it was an enriching experience, so they did find that it was engaging to a point. The majority of them did believe that it helped them think more deeply about the course material and that it was beneficial to the learning. It's not an overwhelming statistic here, but again, this is one class. This was a pilot, and so this is pretty good considering it was our first stab at it. Was it a useful experience? 57.2% felt it was useful. The same amount felt that it was fun and exciting. Just some comments. My students, this came on the general course eval, so they really enjoyed the fact that Second Life was incorporated in the course, and they also wanted to see some required participation in Second Life, which is amazing. Anyways, these are the URLs. If you see me after or want to talk after or so forth, I can get you the PowerPoint or whatever you need. And we're going to move down the line here to Wendy Webb.
Okay, I'm hoping I can stand here. Can you hear me? Okay, so both for this audience and the audience in Second Life, welcome to Cleveland Plus. Second Life is happening right there in Cleveland, although the weather doesn't quite look like that. just to give you a little background of what we've been doing in Cleveland, we actually are at this point kind of old timers. We've been at it for about 2 years, and we have 8 islands. What's unique about what we're doing in Cleveland is that it is a big effort through Case Western Reserve University. And by the way, I'm Wendy Webb in Second Life, Wendy Shapiro in real life. We, along with the university, we are also partnering with much of Cleveland itself, the city. And in particular, our partners include museums, libraries, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and the Cleveland Clinic. So it's pretty exciting in some of the projects that are coming into being. So our projects range from doing a simulcast orchestra concert that was held downtown Cleveland. It was held, we had like 150 avatars on 3 islands during that, and there was about like amount of people in real life. A countywide reading fair. Then along with that at the university, there's classes, office hours, tutoring, and lots of Second Life building. Primarily what we do, rather than say government meetings and whatnot, we focus on education and on learning. And because of the way we run our department altogether, assessment is key. So it's, should I hold it? All right, I'll hold it. All right, better? Okay. All right, so given the amount of time Tanya just took, maybe I'll put a little bit more into my talk. We've been doing many things in Second Life in Cleveland with Case Western Reserve, but I'm going to focus in on 2 that are kind of unique, and I thought this would be helpful just to give you some other ideas. So in 1, this is a class that I taught. It is a 3-credit-hour sophomore class. And its focus was on digital storytelling. So for those of you who have done digital storytelling, you know it's a personal experience, it's writing intensive, and the work that happens throughout the semester focuses on developing this digital story. So it then takes the story, turns it into a script, turns that script into an audio recording, and then is illuminated with images, video, music, etc. And that's developed over time. Well, just to focus on one part of that as it relates to Second Life, at the end, we had a culminating experience where the students had their digital stories streamed into an area on one of our islands, and then we invited other educators to come in to Second Life to both interact with the students as well as to talk about, you know, the content of their stories as well as the process of how it was all done. So the assessment, just in a very general way in that particular project, we're constantly gathering metrics on how many people show up. That's the easiest thing to do. So who's showing up? And right now we're gathering metrics. This is good. We were doing Second Life work throughout the semester, so they were keeping journals and blogs and capturing images and whatnot, and then we had class reflections. And it really was quite interesting because the students were pretty resistant to doing this exhibition, and they were amazed. They were just amazed at the outcome, the turnout, the quality of the interaction. So that's kind of pretty qualitative there. But I want to spend a little more time on a project that we just completed that I think is pretty remarkable. We have project, a research study that's it's really like in its preliminary phases, but the first phase of it has been completed, and it was done with our dental school. So you say, okay, how, and I don't know if you could like zoom in on any of the dental stuff, but we have some of that set up there so you could see. But what happened with this study? So first of all, just to set the stage, in medical education, it is often used, standardized patients are often used, and this is where they hire actors to be patients, and then there's an interaction so that they can practice their diagnostic skills, their communication skills, et cetera. So the idea was, could we set up a situation in Second Life that would parallel what happens with standardized patients? And this was where the study was done. So you can see the dental office. We had three of those. They're actually our pose balls, so that when you click on those, you assume kind of a position. And there was the students that came in as the dentist, and then there was, and we had Masha, and she actually is in world right now, but she acted as the patient. And it was a case study that really centered around being aware that smoking is going to turn your teeth. No matter how much you whiten them, they're going to discolor again. And it was the communication around that. So it was a standard case study. There was 66 dental students involved in this study. They were all third year students. And what they did is that while they were in world, well, let me say there was a comparison against the real life standardized patients against the virtual standardized patients. And they reviewed charts and interviewed virtual and real patients. So this was about smoking. The way we gathered the information after was done through a survey, but it was accumulation of multiple areas. It was kind of like one survey, but had areas where they were looking to investigate attitudes about communication and case-based learning, motivations to role play, so the whole idea of motivation and immersion, and how real is it being in Second Life versus in real life, and then perceived outcomes. Did they think it was worthwhile or not? So these were the findings. These were the outcomes, and I kind of need to read them because they're a little research oriented. So the study suggests, and I have to point out the word there is suggests. The study suggests that the interactive virtual environments can be perceived similarly and rated as comparable to the standardized patients in clinical exercises. Now this is just. It's just a preliminary finding. They were finding no difference between what was coming up from both sides, both real and virtual. That certainly virtual reality is easier, more convenient, and cost-effective than hiring actors in the traditional standardized patient training. They were wondering, you know, did these positive results come about because the novelty of the technology? So that's always that Hawthorne effect. And I think this is kind of interesting that the researchers, there were three researchers, that they do not suggest that standardized patient interaction should be eliminated, but virtual reality alternatives might complement and enhance live actor training. So just to take you one step further, we actually are now working with, and if you see Suzanne Petrono on there, she's developing a schizophrenic avatar with the mannerisms and behaviors, and we'll be working with the Cleveland Clinic and their psychiatric department for medical training there too. So we see some of our focus moving to medical education. So I thank you, and I thank all who are in Second Life, and I'm going to pass this down to Deb.
Thank you. I'm Deb Keack-Franson from CU Boulder, and I know Lloyd wanted us to introduce our avatars so you could find us in World. I'm Beatrice Mesmer in World, and you don't want to find me for asking questions. I think I hold the distinction of being the only person ever stuck in a lake for a full month, looking for the swim button until I found the teleport button. So I'm not the person you want to go to for questions. And I mentioned that, and I will swing back around to that in a little bit. What I'm going to talk about are some of the challenges of doing evaluation in Second Life, because I feel that I've had my share of them over the last year, and talk about future directions in that area. What we have at CU Boulder is one official unofficial island. So that means that CU Boulder bought an island, but nobody knows about it. And then we have a lot of faculty members dabbling. But we don't know how to find them. So sometimes we'll look up CU Boulder and we'll find them on one island or another holding classes or having pieces of their classes in world. So for us, that dispersion and that decentralization has made it difficult to really track who's doing what. So what we did was say, okay, well, we've got this island, we've made an investment, and we'd like to evaluate that one course that's being taught on this island. And the new administrator in me was really trying not to cost that out per student, and yet I had to, because I had to say, is this the right investment for us to make? There's an investment in acquiring Second Life and building out Second Life. There's also a support investment. Even if it's unofficial, what we have found is that just getting it onto the lab machines, just the anxiety costs that we incur on the part of our lab staff, because Second Life has to be updated so frequently, I took that as an investment cost as well. So the grand ideas were to really look at engagement, time on task, satisfaction with Second Life, all as proxies for learning. And what I'm finding, Tanya mentioned this a little bit, that I think that the methods are really best when they're closely linked to Second Life. And what I'm finding now is I'm hearing everybody talk down the line that it's best when you have the person who's passionate and fluent in Second Life be the person doing the evaluation. When the evaluator, like me, comes out and really can't do anything but walk into walls in Second Life, there is a disconnect and it's more difficult to do evaluation. So you've all inspired me to go and get tutorials and better clothes too, because I'm not going back in life without better clothes. So again, the grand ideas were to go into the classes and observe, to pull the chat logs, to start to count. Not just how many people were in on the island at any one time, but how frequently they came, how long they stayed, how long they were on task, or how long they were asleep. Now, for me, it was difficult to find them. I didn't get access to the island until two-thirds through the semester, and so that was a huge obstacle. And then the inability to pull these chat logs and things, that also was a problem. So, of course, we fell back on the tried and true, we'll survey the students. So we did, and our survey instrument was 5 questions for $5, so it wasn't 100 questions, and we got 3 responses. Now, however, they were all positive, so we had 100% just about everything. But again, with the N solo, we really can't say anything. And what we did was we tried to have the students reflect on whether or not Second Life was a good tool for learning, and this was Introduction to Fundamentals of Computing. And what we found is 100%, all 3 of them, said, yes, this is great. We also wanted to know about their satisfaction with it. Did they like it? Did they get more out of it? And so those were just about our 5 questions. Our last one was, if you had the choice, would you to retake this course, would you do it in-world or out-of-world? And all of them said, I would do it in-world, even though I had problems at the beginning or I didn't get it. The one place where we did have neutral responses was where they said there wasn't a full connect between what was in the textbook and the lectures and what they were actually doing in class. So they never made that conceptual leap between the two, which I found interesting since it was Fundamentals of Programming.
What was the course name again?
Fundamentals of Computing.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Good. So the next thing we tried was a focus group. We bought pizza and we had one person show up, so we're not even going there. But then what we did was we started to use our personal connections with our students to find other students who had taken classes. And the results we got from that were very telling. And what we found is that the faculty members who were using Second Life as a supplement or as ancillary, or this is a cool thing to do, let's try this, when there wasn't a strong connection to the course material and when there was a lack of structure about the homework and why they were doing it or why they were in world, the students hated it to the point where they said, I will never go in world again, not even if I'm required to. So there was a strong, very strong response there. On the other hand, in the course where it was well integrated and well structured, and where there was a distinct and deliberate connection made between the course material and the reason they were in Second Life, the students loved it. So that was one of the things that we learned. The other thing that we're suspecting, but I don't have hard data on it, is that this is a niche application, at least on our campus. So for things like programming, where, again, there's a really clear link between Second Life and the course content, or architecture, where we're also getting some interest, then I think that we'll see that use grow. But I don't know that it's going to be spread nicely across campus the way it is in Milwaukee. It sounds like, Tanya, you had across the board. And then the other thing, that the piece of the evaluation, and the evaluation that we did for the infrastructure support was just all the nastygrams and email, so that was an unofficial evaluation. But I just have lists of them from our lab people saying, you know, we can't do this, or you've got to change this, just to figure out how to support the application better in the labs. So AJ is going to go, and then we may go back and forth, because we've been having a standing argument, and we thought you might like to hear it after he's done his little presentation.
Good morning. And good morning, and welcome to everybody joining us in Second Life. My name is AJ Kelton, and in World, I'm AJ Brooks. And Montclair State University has a current investment of three islands in Second Life. Our first was purchased in April of 2007, and this effort was driven by me. It was not a faculty-driven effort. So it became my responsibility to recruit faculty to be interested. And so part of our assessment, it was determined, was we would let the faculty assess the effectiveness of the tool. And let them make the determination if they wanted to. The best assessment is if a faculty tried it and they didn't want to use it again, then it didn't work, or it didn't work for what they wanted to do that time. So we never set up a formal assessment process. Aside from that, the fact that most faculty members, and certainly all part-time faculty members, I teach one class a semester. We are evaluated every single class, every single semester. So we were going to have the student evaluations, and I'm going to actually share with you a little bit about what the students said in the two classes that I taught in World. We got that island in April of 2007, and then the College of Education and Human Services saw some of the benefit of what was going on, and they determined that they wanted to invest in an island also. So in January of 2008, they invested in a second island, which we joined, so we had larger land mass. They made the determination not to develop their island, that they were going to let the faculty do it. So we had one island that was fully developed by me, and then one island that was completely undeveloped. And then faculty began using it for that. And in May of this year, using a small technology grant, we acquired a third island, and it's CHSS South. And what we determined to do with this is to make a location where we could hold meetings and have places for people to meet. But then we took the remainder of the island and we parceled it off. And we asked all of the faculty in the College of Humanities and Social Sciences if they wanted some parcels, and some said yes. Then we offered it up to some of the folks around campus. A couple people said yes. And then what we did with the remaining 22 parcels was we offered up a free land program. And we took applications, and folks put in applications, and a small review committee looked at those applications. And we now have 22 residents on our island, and we're developing this educational community. And there are people who would never have been connected to each other who are now chatting once in a while, talking about. So for me, that's assessment, right? For me, it's effective for them in their teaching and learning. So it's not the same kind of very formal assessment that the other institutions have done. It's sort of informal assessment. We had very good reaction from our Office of Information Technology. They were very supportive. They agreed to push down the Second Life application to the three labs that we teaching labs that we have in our building, and also to the two public labs that are on campus, so that students would be able to do their work in the public labs should they need to and not have the technical requirement. And for us, that was one of our big problems. We have about 17,000 students. It's mostly a commuter school. We're in northern New Jersey, and so we're in relative proximity to Patterson and Passaic and Newark and Camden and Trenton and all areas that have students that would traditionally be considered part of the digital divide. which is, of course, a completely different session to have a conversation about. And so a lot of our students were either didn't have technology or they didn't have technology that could run the application. And so we made that available to them. So that's a little bit about what we're currently doing, a little bit about the assessment. Just to tell you some of the classes that have used Second Life as a teaching and learning tool, we've had an art of fiction class, and this semester that same faculty member is teaching science fiction, which is really cool. She taught Snow Crash, and she's teaching Frankenstein and Handmaid's Tale and some other really cool stuff that we were able to work on. We've had a history professor teach a new student experience. I taught two English writing classes, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that in just a second. We have a law professor who teaches cyber law, and so that was particularly appropriate. And then some of the folks over in the College of Education and Human Services are using it for media in the classroom or for group counseling and a few other classes like that. So because we're about a year and a half old, the assessment follows. I think it was Wendy who said that you know, we're really not at the point where we're just getting to the point where, oh, well, you know, what did you think? And more people are starting to use it. So after this current term, we're going to have much better response. And the College of Education and Human Services is doing formal assessment of the classes that are using it both this semester and next. So by this time next year, we'll have much better assessment on this particular topic. I wanted to talk very quickly I did also want to mention, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Federal Work Study Program that's here in the U.S. I know we have some visitors here from outside also, but what I did this last semester was I tapped into the Federal Work Study Program, and I put out a notice saying we were hiring students who would be working in Second Life. And I thought maybe I'd get like 10 or 11 applicants. We got 75 applicants out of over 600 people who this email went out to. I think it was 670 people. We got 75 applicants. I hired 6 students. Their sole responsibility right now, 8 hours a week, is to help with the Second Life effort. And they love it. They absolutely love it. So, and within 10, 15 minutes, they were able to get up and running in Second Life. So when someone says to me, the students don't want to do it, which is what we get very often. You know, I don't want to do this. Well, it's because I don't want to do it. It's not because it's terrifically hard. I mean, any of you, how many of you actually have avatars in Second Life? Good. Excellent. Wow. Excellent. That's amazing. And so we've all gone through that trial period where we're stuck at the bottom of a lake, right? I mean, I still walk into walls. I mean, you know, and I'm doing this a long time and building islands and stuff. I still will, you know, fly around and slam right into something. But I think that if we set up the right orientation for people, that we can get them up and running in the program very, very quickly. And that becomes an important component of when you do assessment, because the assessment's going to be bad if the students aren't properly acclimated to the environment. And it also, and I think each of us have said that when the tool, and this is a tool, when the tool is used to just because it's cool, or just because it's not, relevance needs to be the top priority, that any technology, right? The relevance needs to be the top priority. There needs to be a real reason why you're using this particular tool over something else. And when you have that relevance, then it becomes clear to the students why you're using it, what the purpose is, and then the assessment will be better because the students see why. So I just want to talk a little bit about my writing class. The first semester, which was a year ago, I used it for 2 classes. I was going to be at EDUCAUSE in Seattle, and so I couldn't teach my class in person for an entire week. So I wanted to hold the 2 classes. Now, talk about commitment. My class was at 8 o'clock in the morning, and so I had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to teach this class. And so the students saw it. They saw it for what it was worth, right? They knew that I was just replacing the classroom experience, and they didn't get into it. And so the reaction was not particularly good. We had 17 comments that were left. 24% of them mentioned Second Life specifically. Now, these are, again, from student responses that every faculty member has to get through their student, through the student survey, the student assessment, and we get the aggregate results. So I get the aggregate results of their responses to the survey and then any comments that they've made. I get the content of the comments. A good majority of them were negative, that they thought it was worthless to do, that they saw it for what it was worth. They thought words were used like ridiculous, not relevant to college writing, distraction from the work. One person said, I give a lot of pointless work, but Second Life was cool. So that was pretty good. Now, in the second semester, it was an entirely hybrid class. On Tuesdays, we met on campus. On Thursdays, we met in Second Life. And so we were not only supplementing the course to meet, you know, to sort of do the hybrid thing, but also I made sure that the work we were doing in Second Life was relevant to the course. I had learned my lesson. And we didn't get as many responses. We only got 8 comments, but they were overwhelmingly positive because the students were able to see what the point was. With that, I'm going to start our argument that we've been having for probably close to a year now. And that is that my question becomes, why assess one tool differently than another tool? We don't, at what level do we go in and say to a faculty member who's using a particular video or a particular website or a particular application that comes with part of their course pack, how granularly do we assess that tool that they're using as opposed to spending a lot of time assessing, you know, Second Life's effectiveness as a tool? And I'm not saying that we shouldn't, and that's not the point that I'm saying. What I'm asking is, if we don't do it with face-to-face classes, why aren't we replicating with using a virtual environment as opposed to the non-virtual environment? Why are we replicating the assessment? And this is where you're going to say, we should. Right. The Saturday Night Live point counterpoint thing. If your university does do, I mean, when we do assessments, there are 2 different types of assessments, right? You have where the department is assessing the faculty member, and that becomes part of the tenure process, et cetera, et cetera. Then you have where the students assess the teacher. In both of those instances, how relevant is the tool that you're using as part of the assessment? If at your university that you assess the tools that faculty use in their teaching environment, then it's relevant to ask the question, is Second Life an effective tool? But if we're not doing that with face-to-face classes, then why would we do it also for non-face-to-face classes? And I know that's a controversial statement or question, especially for people who are interested in assessment and think assessment is important. And I want to stress again, I'm not saying I think assessment is unimportant. I think assessment is very important. What I'm asking is why is it more important to assess that as opposed to any of the many other tools that we have at our disposal?
Oh, real close, okay, without touching it. And I can answer that in very crassly. It's a dollar sign for me, and not just a dollar sign in the acquisition cost of the real estate, but Second Life, there's an investment that the campus is making in staff resources in the application itself. No matter how free it is, you're still having to invest something. You're having to invest something in the maintenance and the upkeep and all of that. And so that's my crass answer. My more realistic answer is that I think we should be doing that level of evaluation for everything but perhaps chalk. Chalk I don't want to evaluate. But clickers, I'd like to evaluate in the same way. I mean, just the things that we've come up with here about guidelines for using Second Life in the classroom and how to measure the effectiveness of it, I think should be applied across the board, except for chalk.
See, now I disagree with you on the chalk. All right, let me see a show of hands of how many people are using, having a Second Life account? Okay, now I want you to keep your hands up. Keep your hands up for just a second. How many of you, if you have an investment in an island, if your university has investment in an island in some kind, keep your hand up. Otherwise, put your hand down. Okay, so the majority, so that would say, what's it, what do you say, it's about 30%? 20%? Okay, so for those 20%, then perhaps maybe assessment of the effectiveness from a dollar sign is very important. But for the majority of the people who are using Second Life, I would say that most people are getting involved in this effort from an individual faculty standpoint. They're saying, I want to use Second Life. I'm going to use Second Life. I'm going to find free land somewhere. I'm going to use this somehow. And I'm not, my institution isn't involved with this. So then the dollar signs become somewhat irrelevant to them because it's an investment.
Can I get in the argument?
Sure, go ahead.
Join us.
Okay, I gotta get up. It's interesting that you're saying that, AJ, because, you know, I just threw this little message out into the virtual world, but remember all those media comparison studies? That just rings in my head, where there's no significant difference when you're comparing one media against another media, and then the outcome, and I should remember, I'm sure you all remember the authors, and I'm blanking, but then the idea was that we really need to look at the attributes of the media, determine what those are, and then that's what we hone in on in terms of assessing.
I agree, and I agree with you, and I agree with you also. I mean, our argument is somewhat of a straw man, right? Because we don't actually disagree with each other. Where we disagree with each other, I think what Deb said is absolutely right. If we're going to assess one tool, then we need to assess all tools. And I think you're absolutely right. We need to use the same metric to assess all of them. I mean, not the same metric necessarily, but we need to say what are the common strengths of a tool. Let's look at tools in general. What's a common strength of a tool? Does this meet that metric? Mm-hmm. Look what I started. Oh, my goodness.
All right. Anyway, here, Tanya, go ahead, Tanya.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think this is very pertinent in many ways. We talk about assessment and evaluation. On our campus, when we talk assessment, we're talking assessment of student learning. We talk about evaluation, we're talking about the evaluation, the performance of a program or the quality of a program or a technology or that sort of thing. So just the distinction on our campus. This is Tanya Justin, Juice Gyoza in World. Sorry, I'm trying to communicate with two worlds. Another thing is, I think that for our campus, it is important to be assessing all sorts of pedagogical practices more than it is assessing the technology. We want to make sure that the technology is meeting the pedagogical needs of our campus, therefore we know where to put our money rather than just throwing our money everywhere, because we don't have any money, like many of you. Another issue, though, is beyond just does it impact learning, what impacts learning? Just using Second Life, is it going to do anything? And that's where it comes into evaluating Second Life and what pedagogical needs can it meet, what needs does it meet the best, and then how does it impact learning? Sometimes we forget about the social aspect, the process. So what do we need to do with Second Life? And that was part of our evaluation that I didn't talk about here specifically today, but, you know, how can we recommend to faculty and as faculty ourselves use it effectively that we're impacting learning? What instances are other technologies better? Second Life isn't the best for everything. Maybe the course management system is good for other things and other technologies are good for other things and so forth. So I think we need to keep the grand scope in mind. And right now I think we're really at is what are our pedagogical needs? How does Second Life help us meet them? And what are our best practices in using Second Life? And then I think we can move into broader things. You know, is this particular use, is using Second Life, for example, as role play situation, giving students distanciation through space and time, impacting their learning because of the way it's changed that process? And looking at those specific uses and then linking that to learning. That's just my opinion.
And just one more sentence is when I was talking about the attributes, what is unique about this type of technology that we can tap into to extend the wonderful things that are currently going on in education?
And I just want to reiterate, just in case anyone's not clear about what I was saying about assessment, I do think assessment is important. But I think that it's important to continue to have this conversation. And I want everyone to understand one thing real quick. It's a little plug here. EDUCAUSE is committed to exploring these types of things. As a matter of fact, this conversation needs to keep happening long after this session is over. And EDUCAUSE has committed to forming the EDUCAUSE Virtual Worlds Constituent Group. For those of you who are here in Orlando, we're meeting this afternoon at 4:55, directly above this room. So it's 2:30, and it's from 4:55 to 3:10. This is a long-term group. This is a group that's been set up specifically to discuss virtual worlds, not just Second Life, all virtual worlds. For those of you who are in World, just search the map for Montclair, and it's on Montclair State CHSS South, and that's the extent of my plug, and I'll sit down now.
That's all the time we have. Thank you for coming.
Oh, that's too funny.
Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you all in World as well for joining us. We actually met the max of the sim. We had 60-plus people in World viewing this presentation. Thank you all for coming out.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Stream multi-format audio and video to PCs and mobile devices with Helix Server from Real. Information at realnetworks.com.